And now, the Last Word on Habs podcast, brought to you by the Last Word on Sports Network. Let's start the show.
Welcome back to the Last Word on Habs podcast. I'm Connor Lapalme, and as always, I'm joined by Johannes Wilden. How's it going, Johannes?
Plus ça change, plus la même chose, Connor. How are you?
Yeah, not bad. It was a pretty quiet week for the Canadians, I think, so I don't know how much we're going to talk about. But
yeah, nothing going on at all.
Yeah. I guess we're going to dive right into the big news of the week. It's no use beating around the bush. Montreal Canadiens, they fired head coach Claude Julien and associate coach Kirk Muller and promoted assistant Dominic Ducharme to interim head coach and promoted Alex Burrows as an assistant coach from Laval. So that's the big news. So, Johannes, I'll start with you. How do you feel? What are your thoughts on the big move here?
Well, I've got lots of takes here, but just before we get to my takes, I just want to know, how surprised were you when the announcement came through? It was like, I think it was like 9:45 or whatever in the morning. How surprised were you?
I'd just say I was pretty surprised, just because I know people were clamoring for it, and I think you and I kind of fall in the same boat here. We both thought maybe it was time for a new voice. Nothing against Claude Julien, who I understand is a great guy, and it just, for whatever reason, it wasn't clicking here. So, you know, something had to be done. My thought was, though, because of the way the schedule is, especially since they had that week off, you know, not this past week, but the week before, that would have been more ideal of a time, I think, to do something like this, just because of the way the season works. I think I did some research. I looked into it. I think the Canadians only have 2 or 3 other instances of having more than one day off between games. So it's going to be hard for any coach to make significant changes.
Yeah.
So I thought it was just a weird thing to do it in this season, or I wouldn't be sure how much could change.
I saw your tweets, and I don't disagree with you.
I wasn't surprised. I mean, I thought it was not overdue, but I thought it was time maybe to get a new voice in there.
Okay, so I have 3 problems with this coaching change. Well, first of all, let me just say, I think Dominic Ducharme is the future. I think the Canadians are well suited to have him in the driver's seat. I think it was time for a change. I think it was past time for a change. But I have 3 problems, and I want to organize these thematically. My first issue is with Claude Julien, and I think everyone's health decisions are their own, but I really think after his heart attack scare in the fall during the playoff bubble, that should have been the time for him to step to one side. I asked my wife, who's a physician who has a lot of patients and who are Claude Julien's age, and I asked her, after what happened to him, how likely is it that he's going to be able to come back and do this? And she said, this is a life-changing event. When something like this happens, your whole life changes. And I just think it was a mistake for Julien to think that he was going to be able to come back. And it would have been an elegant, I think, ending to the Julien era to not have him fired mid-season. Okay, that's my problem number one. Was with Claude Julien. Problem number two is with Marc Bergevin. How in the world do you allow there to be a week off when you think there's going to be a possibility for a coaching change, and then the first game back after they lose, fire the coach? If you're gonna fire the coach, give the new guy at least a week to have some practice, talk about do some transition. Doing it this way, and I don't always agree with the talking heads that TSN 690 bring on, but it did feel a little panicky. It did not feel methodical, which is, I think, we're sort of used to Bergevin. Sometimes he overthinks things, I think. In this case, it felt rushed, and obviously Ducharme was always the future in Montreal, but I don't think this was elegantly handled, and for a franchise that really cares about how they handle things, I don't think this was done particularly well. My third problem is with Dom Ducharme, and we want to give him a wide berth and lots of opportunities to figure out what his path's going to be, but starting Armia and Deneau 3-on-3 last night, This is supposed to be your new team. Now, I get you have to start Carey Price. He's your franchise player in your first game. You're not going to try to send some weird message or play head games in your first game as head coach of the Montreal Canadiens. But when it goes to 3-on-3 and you've been outplaying them and you've got players that have been outskating every member of the Winnipeg Jets, and you start with Danault, who seems to be trapped in a box somehow. I think he's like, he's doing that mime thing where he's like trapped in a box and he can't get out. And Armia, who had a great game, I thought, the game before in Winnipeg and had two goals, but he did not look very good last night. Over your younger players who were skating, who were creating chances, that looks like more of the same, trying not to lose, playing defensively in 3-on-3. You already have the point. Go ahead and try and win the game. All right, that's my Tony Marinaro rant for you. What do you got?
Can I address maybe some of your comments first?
Please do.
So the first about the health, I think to you and me and your wife and most people who aren't competitive at that level, because even though the coaches aren't, players, they're still uber competitive people. I think, while logically saying the health scare probably should have been something to sort of make them take a step back and say, okay, you know what, maybe I don't need this stress, I don't need this pressure, and, maybe this would be sort of maybe it's my body telling me I need to walk away. But I understand, well, I don't, but I get that these guys are all wired a little different than you and me, that they, like, no, I'm good. Like, I can, it's the same kind of wiring that, like, when there's a player like Alex Galchenyuk, I'll use the name since he's been traded 17 times already this season, right? He's a player that has, like, a lot of talent. And so teams think, I can get that guy I can make it work with him. You know what I mean? Where these teams couldn't. It's the same thing where it's like, I can come back and be as good as I was, or you know what I mean? So I appreciate what you said, and I think logically speaking, that does make a lot of sense. But I know that the way, well, I don't, you know what I'm trying to say, the way these guys are mostly wired. I mean, wasn't it? I mean, it was a while ago, but Pat Quinn had the same thing happen to him, where they thought he had a heart attack before a playoff game. I mean, it wasn't a heart attack, but he had the same kind of like heart scare thing, and then he was back coaching a playoff game like two games later. So these guys are just, the wiring in their head is a little different for us to understand, I think. That's the first thing, but I don't think your point is totally wrong. The thing, moving on to your point about Bergevin, the weird thing, I don't know if you saw this quote, I'm sure you did, but he'd already had his mind made up about moving on from the coach before they lost to Ottawa, which to me makes zero sense, because like, for, let's say the Canadiens won that game, 8-0. You're going to fire your coach after that kind of sort of, quote-unquote statement win. So it just seemed a little weird what we were hearing out of the press conference. And unfortunately, it was also a lot more of the same, right? Like, we've all have to be better. I have to be better. The fans are in the room. The same kind of messaging we've been hearing from Marc Bergevin. The only thing that's a lot different this year is, because the team... because he went out and added so many pieces to the team and spent a bit of money, and I guess also the way the team kind of jumped out of the gates, expectations are much higher than they've been. Every year fans are excited for the Canadiens, but I mean, the last 4 years, right? It's, you kind of sort of saw this team's, wasn't great. It was sort of part of the whole reset. The team is going to be okay, but sort of building to the future. And people thought that the future was now, like this year, and it hasn't really worked out. And I agree that it felt a little panicky in the way it was handled. I think, two games out, like since that they had that week off, I kind of said it before. I thought maybe since the week off is gone, I don't see a point in trying to bring in a new guy who's going to have a very hard time implementing his new systems and styles and things like that when there is no time to practice. So I agree it feels a bit panicky, which is kind of opposite of what we've expected, like you said, opposite of what sort of how Marc Bergevin operates. But I think he also realizes that now this is, his seat is very hot, I think. I think we all make the jokes, we think he's got pictures of Jeff Molson and there's no reason why he can't get fired, but, they actually went out and made significant moves, and we still saw some of the old failings of the team, terrible power play, undisciplined, terrible penalty kill, you know, for all the goals they scored the first month of the year, they can't score again for some reason. The defensive zone coverage is terrible for most nights. So there's just a lot of these consistent issues that have been going on with the team. It seems, I mean, you know, it doesn't seem to matter who's on the ice. It seems to be a lot of the same issues kind of creep up, which is pretty frustrating as a Habs fan. So I think, you know, it can't be if, you know, he's on his third coach. It cannot always be the coach. It, you know, despite the fact that the team looks good on paper, maybe it's the team he put together. Maybe he, you know, I mean, we can maybe talk about it a little bit later, but, you know, he can identify good players, but can he identify the player, the right players to build a successful team? Those are, I think, two different things. The last point about Ducharme, yeah, I mean, the 3-on-3 overtime thing, I agree. You know, I saw Dano and Armia, I kind of just threw up my hands. I'm like, all right. And I know he explained after the game, you know, he wanted to win possession. And the whole point was Dano was going to take the faceoff and get off the ice. But, you know, if you're paying attention, Dano has not been that good on faceoffs this year. He was not, he was, I think, 46% in the game last night in the faceoff circle. So that doesn't really, you know, if you're going to try and win the puck, Nick Suzuki was at 50%. I mean, it's not great, but it's better than what Dano was. So you put Nick Suzuki out there. And I think, you know, I mean, even if you watch the whole play, Dano, like you said, he's playing in a box. I don't know if he's inside his own head, but even on the game-winning goal, what the hell? He's in front of the net. He was just standing in front of Jake Allen, like essentially being a fourth Winnipeg player. Like, he wasn't doing anything but screening his goalie. Like, if I don't know if you've seen those replays, but they've been sort of all over the different angles of the goal. And I don't know what's going on with his head. He's, I mean, you know, we could talk about how he still does the defensive stuff well, but even that he's not doing so great right now. Like, he's definitely, I don't know if he's in his feelings or in his head or whatever, but he's definitely a liability. And to sort of piggyback on the thing, like, I think fans are getting frustrated, and very frustrated that he still seems to get these top minutes, despite the fact he's not producing and not doing the things he's sort of, we've become expected him doing. Anyway, I think I agree across the board with what you're saying. I just think with Ducharme, it's going to be too hard to really judge him on anything this year because I don't know how much he can change in terms of systems and styles. Apart from last night, like you said, against the Jets, they were pushing the pace, which was refreshing to see.
Yep.
And they were playing way, we had way more jump in their game. And if they're going to keep playing like that, you know, I also saw a quote after that he said, you know, he told the guys they deserved a better outcome, which they probably did, but also this is the NHL, you know, like, deserved and what you get are two very different things, so you can't just talk about what they deserve. It's no time, and there's no time for moral victories right now for the Canadiens. And that's how I see it. So
I do think they played better last night than we've seen, notwithstanding the overtime and notwithstanding the inability to finish. I know the Suzuki goal wasn't particularly impressive, but I think in fairness they had a lot of other decent chances to score that either were stopped or were blocked. And, you know, Winnipeg team is not a bad team by any stretch.
No.
I will get off this, and I just think, you know, maybe this is a feature and not a bug. So maybe the coach change halfway through the year does take the pressure off Dominic Ducharme, because if this has been his team since the beginning of the year, we would, you know, we'd be talking about different things. He wouldn't have the built-in excuse that he doesn't really have time to shape the team. But I just think if you have respect for the coach that you're bringing in, that you say is the future of your franchise, I just don't get why you wouldn't give that person the most opportunity to succeed. And whether that's starting the season with him after your veteran coach goes down with a heart attack after showing us a pattern of problematic choices and decisions which doesn't really seem like the future of the NHL in terms of coaching, in terms of different styles and different ways to approach the game, or giving him at least a week to like get his head around what the new job is and give his players a chance to settle into the new kind of expectations. I mean, when I listen to Dom Ducharme talk, he has a very different style than Julian did. he talks about working one-on-one with different players. He talks about, like, setting time aside and having a book on every one of his players, and instead of focusing on necessarily big systems all the time, spending time working on individual progression. And that's, I think, number one, perfectly suited to this generation of hockey players, but I also think is kind of a breath of fresh air, and I wish he had had a week. I wish he had had a week
at least
to get sorted before, you know, what is starting to look like has the potential for being yet another lost season in Montreal. I don't know where you want to go from here. I mean, we can talk about the individual games. We can talk about Carey Price and the emerging, you know, goaltender controversy in Montreal. I don't know how you see that, but for me at this point, the net should be Allen's to lose until, you know, he has a bad game and Price gets the net until he loses it. I mean, at this point, it's put up or shut up time, and Jake Allen has looked miles and miles ahead of Carey Price in the net this year.
Yeah, I mean, it's not hard to argue your point. I'm a very big Carey Price supporter. I think he gets, most of the time, he gets way more flack than he deserves because people focus on the wrong things, I find. But, you know, it's kind of, you can't really argue much in his favor. You know, despite the fact I think the first game they lost in Winnipeg, most of those goals were not really savable, you know? But, I mean, that Nate Thompson goal was, like, unforgivable. It's like a goal you can't give up. I mean, it's sort of a goal you should make in, like, Pee-wee, or a save you should make in Pee-wee, I should say. So it's, but on the overall picture all season, Price's just seemed, I think I've noticed sort of a trend when he's on his game, everything is so controlled. All his movements are, like, controlled and focused. You don't see him sliding around too much. Like, obviously every goalie has to make, like, a desperation save, but everything with Price when he's on is fluid. He's, like, where he needs to be before the puck is where to shoot. You know what I mean? Like, everything looks easy because he's so in control. And when he's not on his game, he's sliding everywhere. He's, like, you can just tell the way he's in the net. It's like he loses his net almost every shift when the puck's in their zone. It's just weird. And all season he's sort of been swimming in his net. So something's off. I don't know. Maybe it's a personal matter. You know, you can never tell. People have stuff going on in their lives that will affect the way they perform at their job. You know, it's, people are human. I don't know anything. I'm just saying something's off with his game, and you can just see it by the way he is in the net, the way he moves. And that means, I think a lot of people are on this boat where, like, you know what, let him sit down, let him work with the goalie coach. You know, not that you want to scratch him, but, like, I'd almost be like, hey, you know what, just take this week to, I mean, it's hard to take a week, but, like, you know, use the third goalie and have Allen, and I think it's not Lindgren, but whoever the third goalie is, have them play a couple of games. You just work with Stefan Waite. Get your whatever you need to get in order, if it's possible. Because, like, as much as we like Jake Allen and how good he's played, I think we both understand that if the Canadians want to do any kind of serious damage, they're going to need Carey Price. So, you know, but right now he's not himself. And the Canadians, in a season like this, when you have, you know, you're only playing your division, there's, you know, you're not going to be able to catch up as easily as you want to if you fall behind too far. So you don't have time or the opportunity to sort of hope he plays himself out of it. Especially now, I mean, it's already, we've gone through 2 months of the season. You know, the Canadians just can't afford to hope he snaps out of it or play himself out of it.
Yeah.
It's just, you know,
And he's a professional, and he has to understand that winning has to come first. And when he gets his head right and he's able to look like the Carey Price that we've come to expect, he'll have his net back. And if it's Allen and McNiven taking more games than you would otherwise expect, so be it. I think, as a student of the game, I'm sure you've read Ken Dryden's The Game, and you know that goalies are wired just a little bit different. And you just think about that position. You have people firing hard pieces of vulcanized rubber at you over and over and over. And your job is to put your body in between that and the goal. It's a, it's a different headspace. And I think it makes sense then, given everything we know about sport and psychology and how things go together, that when people are struggling, that we give them time to find their feet again. No one doubts that Carey Price is part of this team going forward. First of all, no one's going to take that contract. but also, he's the face of the franchise in many ways. And after everything that happened with Patrick Waugh, I just don't believe that, you know, trade talk or whatever, expansion draft, whatever. Like, I just don't, that's not going to happen. I do think, though, that he is somebody that needs to be approached carefully, professionally, and with a, you know, he's going to earn his way back. But meantime, this is why you have depth at the mm-hmm. goaltender position. And so it's time to see Jake Allen for a little while. It's time to see if the Canadian can string some wins together. When Jake Allen falters, like he is inevitably going to do, and Carey Price is ready to take his net back, he can do that. And let's hope that happens. But whoever the Canadians have in net is not going to stop the defensive lapses that we are seeing every single night. And I got to say, man, I know that I've been up and down on Sherratt, but I was an early doubter, and I have not seen anything that's made me think that I was wrong. I don't like that pairing, number one. I don't like his decision-making, number two. I don't know what the answer is. I was a little surprised to see them start again last night. I wondered if maybe Ducharme would think about pairing Weber with a sort of a younger, more mobile defenseman. Maybe, number one, to help mentor that defenseman, but also just to sort of take a little bit of the pressure off in terms of having to be higher in the neutral zone, both in the when leading the attack or when getting back. I know Sherratt's faster than Weber, but neither are what you'd call a mobile defenseman. And I just don't see the benefit of keeping them together anymore. What are your thoughts on our defensive adventures in Montreal?
If you're the Canadians, you're just hoping that it's Shea Weber is not, you know, hitting his decline. You know what I mean? Like, you hope if it is, it's not the steep decline. But he's been not. I mean, that pairing, I didn't love it. Even, I mean, I think we've talked about it. I don't love it. And I didn't love it because they're both slow. You know, they like to talk about I think if Brian Mudrick on TSN calls him like the Twin Mountains or whatever, but like that was a good solid defense style in like 1998.
Yeah.
Two giant, you know, bruising defensemen. That's not how it works now. And I think if we're going to go back to the GM, the big failing, I think, of the offseason was not addressing the fact that they had not enough puck movers and speed on the back end. I mean, yes, there's Jeff Petrie. We've talked about Victor Mete being what Victor Mete is, but even when he's in the lineup, he stands out because he can skate. And I understand why sometimes they might go to him, but that's because they have no one else that can sort of fill that role. You know, I mean, Romanov.
Right.
You know, he could be that guy, but he's a rookie, so you don't want to put too much on his plate, you know, too soon. You know, I think he's played very well, but he still is going through growing pains like every rookie defenseman in the NHL forever. And, you know, there's Brett Kulak, who kind of has a bit of that, but is not, you know, he's a bottom pair defenseman, so you can't really bump him up. It's weird. I thought that they went and got Edmondson, and I heard Bergeron saying how they want to be tougher to play against in their own zone. And that sounds nice. You want to make teams not want to go. You want to punish them and all that hockey talk, you know, we want to be tough to play against and, you know, make it hard on the teams to get to our front of our net. You know what makes it hard to get to the front of the net? When the puck's not in your zone.
Yeah.
So, you know, it just seems to still have a bit more of an older thinking behind it. And that was a concern. I know we talked about it at the beginning of this season, that they didn't have enough of that mobility at the back end. Now, it didn't matter at the beginning of the year. They were scoring and they were winning. And even though they weren't playing great defensively, they were outscoring teams. So the issue was kind of glossed over because, you know, winning kind of cures all that ails you, right? So, but now that they're in the problems they've had, then these things are getting exposed way more. And, I mean, we're not the only two people, Habs fans, that have been asking for them to break up the Weber and Sherratt pairing because, for whatever reason, even though I guess we could say last year they looked okay together, I mean, Sherratt was putting up, scored some big goals and stuff. It's not working. You know, they both are slow. They're both getting caught, I find, a lot out of position because they're trying to play an offensive, trying to be more offensive or more, you know, more activated in the offensive zone, but they don't have the speed to cover up for it. So it feels, I don't know, it just seems like it's not working. It's the same thing with Phil Deneau, with Brendan Gallagher and Tatar or whatever. It's not working. Stop doing it. It's you know, you try something different. And, you know, we say different, going back to Claude Julien, right, when things weren't going wrong, his big changes were always like, oh, I'm going to insert Victor Mete for Brett Kulak, or I'm going to scratch, you know, one of my guys on the fourth line and bring in a fourth liner. I'm like, that's not going to change the real problems when your top line isn't scoring or, you know, whatever, you know. You got to make real changes. You got to say, okay, this isn't working, and I know everyone's been saying it, but, you know, maybe put Romanov with Weber just to see it. Maybe just break it up, change it, because it's not working. And it's frustrating to watch. You know, the definition of insanity, trying to do the same thing over and over and expecting different results. That's what we've been watching for 4 years.
It's 2021. You can have Sherrod or Edmondson. You can't have both. I prefer Edmondson. And I mean, look, if you look at the left side, you've got Kulak, you've got Sherrod, you've got Edmondson. If you say Shea Weber is not your number one D now, you look on the right side and you have Weber, Petrie, and Romanov, maybe you say we're going to put Petrie on the number one D pairing, although he looked really bad last night.
Yeah, he had
like
a bad
not
one.
Not bad, but like really, really bad. Now that's unusual for him, and that's why it stands out so much, because he took two bad penalties. He just was
One penalty was not a penalty. I'm sorry. Anyway.
Yeah, continue. I mean, he got called for two penalties. Let's say. I think it's interesting to sort of think about, again, just using what you have more judiciously. And what we know about Dom Ducharme is that he's not somebody who thinks you have to roll four lines. He is willing to put the best performers and give them more minutes. The thing that's been weird is Deneau, given that how he hasn't really done very much. And the three-on-three, I guess, is the other head-scratcher, because you would have thought he would have played the people who've been playing the best in the three-on-three. I mean, God, Byron, Suzuki, Romanov in the three-on-three. Like, there's so many options that you have.
I was... Even if you're going to go with Deneau because he's your overall best face-off guy and you want to win the face-off, all right, I can wrap my head around it, but give him a better... Like, not that Armia is bad, but give him someone else. Put him out there with Toffoli. Put him out there with Gallagher. Put him, you know... And not, you know, I don't picture Yoel Armia being a 3-on-3 game breaker, and that's not a shot.
Well, it's because he's playing his former team, and he scored two goals the night before, and he looked like an absolute sniper. But you're right; he is not your number. If he's in your top three for a 3-on-3 overtime, we're all in trouble.
And the other thing was Sherratt too. I mean, again, if I'm rolling 3-on-3, I mean, I know you got to play Weber. I don't know if I put Sherratt or Edmondson at all on 3-on-3. And I know he's part of your top pair, but he like you said, it's not like skating is not his forte.
3-on-3 is pond hockey. It's pond hockey. So who can
there's too
skate
much space.
The fastest? Who can blow the other guys' teams out? What did Winnipeg do? They started three forwards. What did we do? Yeah. We started a third line. Like, I just don't understand. I just don't get it. I don't get it.
Started a penalty kill unit, yeah.
Yeah, I don't know where I was going with all that, except to say that I don't know. I think we're going to see some changes on defense. I don't. This season is so weird. I don't imagine that we're going to see. I don't think we're going to see any trades just because of what it means on either side of the border, and I don't think teams are going to be anxious to move players within the North or the Scotia North division. I do wonder, like, does Cale Fleury make his way back up to the big team? I do wonder, like, do they look to try and shake things up by trying different pairings and maybe not default to Weber as your number one D player? I mean, I just think it has to be based around accountability. It can't be based around longevity. It can't be based around who's been there the longest and has the most sway in the room. And, you know, Shea Weber is a consummate professional. He is a leader. If he thinks that not playing number one minutes is going to give this team a better chance to win, I have to believe that he would advocate for that himself. And I just think it might be time to just think about, okay, what are the pairings that give us the best chance to skate with other teams in the year of our Lord 2021?
Yeah, and I agree. I want to see Fleury too. I thought last year he didn't look too bad. Obviously he had ups and downs, but I didn't think he was terrible. I think also it's too bad that the Habs waived Noah Juulsen. It'd be nice to see. I mean, I haven't been paying too much close attention to Florida. I don't know how many games he's been in, but, you know, it would be another solid option to bring in, who I think, brings a bit of that physicality, but also I think is a bit of a better skater than some of those older guys. So, but, you know, what's done is done.
Yeah.
We need to see the lines changed up. Whatever they've been doing hasn't been working. So it's just frustrating to watch it over and over. Like, this will be the game everything comes together. You know what? You don't have time for that. And it is frustrating as a fan, and you know, we kind of saw it, and people are starting to make the comparison to like David Desharnais when it was Michel Therrien, you know, always throwing him out there, even though he would be struggling or not, you know, and obviously he had that connection with Max Pacioretty, but you know, he was not a top line center, but much like Deneau for the first part of his career here, he was the best option at the time. The thing is now he's not playing, like that line isn't clicking at all. And it's like, last night, it was probably like a late last night, kind of half awake conspiracy theory I had. It was like, are they actually just like, is there something more behind the fact that he has to play all the time? You know what I mean? Like, is there like...
You mean they're building some up kind to of, a trade?
No, like it's... Because, okay, after the coaching change, right, there was always the big bugaboo where the language of the coach always has to play a part in all this. So all I said is, I never say that it can't be a French coach. Whoever the best person is the best person. My problem is if you are willingly limiting your talent pool to search from, it makes it harder to find that best person, right?
Oh, I mean,
so like people were saying like, oh, they could bring in Gerard Gallant. I'm like, he's from PEI and he doesn't speak French. Like, he's not bilingual. I'm like, no, he's got Gerard Gallant, but it's Gerard Gallant. He's not French. So you can't even consider him. That's the issue, right? Like when Joel Quenneville was let go, they couldn't bring in Joel Quenneville because he doesn't speak French. Meanwhile, he's one of the better coaches. I mean, Florida, I think, is doing pretty well this year. So it's just like things like that irritate me about the way that the team is being run, right? If you like, the Canadians are one of the more profitable teams, and since there's a salary cap, you can't outspend teams with players, but you can outspend them in your coaching and in your front office. And if you're going to limit who you can bring in to the important roles because they don't speak a specific language, it feels like you're chopping one of your legs out. And I don't want to sound like this is like an anti-French thing, because it's not. But I think if you're conducting, like if you're in any business, right? If you're hiring, I don't know. If you're hiring a CEO for a company or a president of a company, you're not going to say, well, this person, if they don't speak, I don't know, Urdu, you know, you can't get the job. That's not really sound, right? It's placating to a certain segment of the media and population that I think gets way too much what do you want to call it? I guess I have way too much sway, or they seem to care. And it's been going on for a long time with Montreal. And again, this is probably like me half awake and like, are they trying to force, like, is they're forcing it with Deneau, right? It feels like. Sorry to sort of circle.
Well, I think about Deneau as a good all around player that has produced a lot in the past, more than anyone's expected, who has had a brutal start to the year. And I just think he is their default because they believe in him as being responsible, and even though he doesn't score, it's like we used to say with Lehkonen, even though he doesn't score, he does a lot of other good things. I think problem right now is that he's not, and Deneau, this is Deneau now, he's not doing the good things on the back end of the ice either.
But even if you're going to talk about Lehkonen being a responsible player when he doesn't score, he was never getting 20 minutes, 24
Fair
minutes
enough.
Of ice time.
Absolutely, you're right.
That's the difference, right? I mean, what I mean by forcing, like, And I hate to say this because I really, really want to think. Like, I don't think this is it, but sometimes you have these stupid thoughts. Like, would he be getting this shake if his name wasn't Francophone? You know what I mean? And that's maybe not fair to say.
It's not impossible, but I think you have to look at the totality of his work.
I agree, but even if you look at the totality of his work, he's never scored more than 12 goals in a season. He's never scored more than 40 points. I'm not saying he's a bad player. That's not what I'm saying at all. He's a very good player.
But he's the number one center for a reason, right? And even if we can't necessarily see it.
The default number one center until...
Yeah, well, you could say David Desharnais was the number one center too.
Exactly right. Yeah. If you're the only game in town, you know, then yeah, you're the number one center. But I don't know. Like I said, it was like a late night, half awake kind of stupid thought I had. But
it's Montreal. That stuff happens.
But because nothing has changed, like with the defensive pairings, I don't think that's it. But it was just like a stupid thought I had.
I don't necessarily think it's stupid to be thinking about Francophone identity and language politics when we talk about the Montreal Canadiens. It has been and always will be part of the team. It's hard to figure out what percentage when individual, decisions around players, how much that feeds into it. But it's not totally irrelevant. I think when we talk about Deneau, the thing we have to talk about is the fact that he turned down a big contract for term. By saying he was worth more, and then the league blew up because of coronavirus, and he is never going to get that offer again. And I think he has to live with himself every single morning, knowing that he turned down the best contract he was ever going to get, and now is going to have to enter a year of difficult decision-making where either he's going to have to take less money than he was going to get initially, or he's going to have to leave the only French Canadian media market in the NHL. And I just, fair enough. Ottawa, you have the Gatineau connection and whatever, but it just does not compare when you think about Montreal for a French Canadian player. So I think that is the piece that, we talk about psychology and sports and all of that stuff. There is absolutely no way that's not figuring into the shaky start that we've had. And I think he has not played well. The fact that he hasn't played well is unusual. You have to look at some of the macro things that have happened over the last 6 months. He is threatened by younger players who do things he cannot do. He turned down a huge contract that he's not going to get again. And it has to be weighing
publicly kind of went in on himself too, saying he thinks he's the number one center in the NHL, and he's
how many number one centers don't score 20 goals? You know what I mean? Like, it's just not.
I agree. Yeah. I'm just telling you what he said.
Yeah.
I for sure all this stuff is weighing on him, and it's affecting his play, and he's not his usual, self in the defensive zone. Last year everyone was talking about how he should be up for the Selkie. People get a little excited in Montreal, but he's a very good player. Obviously offensively he's having a brutal start to the year, but I guess what I'm saying is, you see a player like Kotkaniemi who people think it'd be nice if he had some actual offensive forwards to play with to see what he can do. Instead of having sort of the revolving door of, I think he's played with Armia, Lekkonen, Perry, Toffoli, Tatar. Seems like if any line gets changed, it's his. So I feel like it's hard for anyone to gain consistency. Meanwhile, they've had that. I know Tatar has been sort of in and out and up and down the lineup, but they've had the Gallagher-Deneau combination all year. And, Gallagher hasn't been playing, offensively speaking, that great either.
He had a good game last night.
Yeah, he had a very good game last night, but, there's a good game and there's also the production part of it. And, it's just, at a certain point you start seeing it as Phil Deneau, who's having a very difficult year, bringing down one of your best offensive players, right? Brendan Gallagher scored 30 goals twice back-to-back seasons before last year was cut short. Right now the Canadiens are struggling with offense, so I find it odd that they're putting out a player who, even if he breaks out of his slump and filled in O, is not necessarily going to turn on and score, you know, 8 games in a row. And, like, you know, it's not his style or his game. I just feel like it'd be nice to see Gallagher and, like, maybe not Gallagher with Kotkaniemi, but something. Give Kotkaniemi someone that can he can play with to sort of develop some chemistry, as opposed to just rotating his wingers, which, you know, it's hard to build chemistry and consistency when you don't know who you're playing with game to game.
I think this is the challenge for Dom Ducharme, right? Because yeah. he's got to look at, okay, if I was starting a team from scratch, all of my players would have a chance to show me who they are, and I would make decisions based on what I was seeing. I've inherited this team, and people have different expectations about who they are on the team and what they can do, and now I have to balance keeping my veterans happy while making sure I'm icing the best team. And look, I've said it before, he is the future of this organization, and I'm really excited. But I think the challenge in some ways is that he can only ice the team that the general manager gives to him. And if Mark Bergevin is really on the hot seat and Ducharme can't make a deep run to the playoffs, I mean, first we got to make the playoffs, but, you know, make a deep run in the playoffs, you got to think the general manager is in trouble, and any new general manager who comes in might want the chance to pick their own coach. And so Ducharme, I think, only has as much time as Bergevin has, which is less than he had before this year.
Yeah, I agree. Like, it's the situation for Ducharme is not ideal. I think everyone understands that. I kind of get a kick out of people kind of, I think, a little bit overreacting on Twitter, which is, you know, super uncommon for Twitter. But, you know, how, like, oh, Dominic Ducharme, like, I get some of his decisions and sort of, like, you know, we've talked about it, the 3-on-3 stuff and the lineup stuff. But again, he's had a single practice. So it's going to be hard to judge him on anything because there's no time for him to do anything. And it feels like if this is supposed to be your future guy, you're kind of setting, it's not quite setting him up for failure, but it kind of is, you know, like, because it's almost a situation where he can't do anything that he wants to do, if that makes any sense. I mean, he's going to have to do the best he can in the situation. He's obviously kind of, you know, he's coaching for his life, but, you know, it's how the team does under him the rest of the way is going to really go a long way for him in terms of his, like, prospects with the organization and even outside the organization, right? As, you know, even though that isn't fair, you know, life isn't fair, and that's just something that happens to coaches, right? So we'll see. I just, yeah, I'm with you. It kind of, it's not that it's not fair, but I think, yeah, Mark Bergevin didn't really put the future of the Canadiens coaching in a very desirable position or a promising position the way he kind of dropped him in this year when he did it. But we'll see. I mean, hopefully Ducharme can see some more changes, and hopefully they can keep the jump up they had that last night in Winnipeg. At least I think if they're playing that way, they should sort of find themselves, you know, assuming they can find the scoring touch again and not only find goals from, you know, weird shots from behind the net. You know, the Canadiens hopefully should break out of this funk, because, you know, it's 5 games in a row they've lost. We're 2-3 more away from 8. You know, the Canadiens love those 8-game losing streaks, so we'll see. I don't know. It's just, it's hard to be as optimistic as everyone was, you know, at the end of the beginning of the month. It's been a real rough ride here through about February.
It? How about it's and the truth of who this team is somewhere in between that flush of the first 10 games and the crushing disappointment of the last 10 games. And so the thing that I saw last night that gave me a little bit of hope was energy. We saw defensive zone entries. We saw the defense a little bit more involved. This was a true 2-1 game. You know what I mean? Like, Montreal looked better but couldn't really finish and then blew it in overtime. If they outchance teams as much as they did last night, they're going to have better results. I think the question that we have to ask ourselves is, in the current environment where, you know, making personnel changes becomes harder, is this the team that is constructed well enough to be able to thrive in the current NHL? And I just, the Sherratt Edmondson, you got to sort of pick one now, and we're too slow on the back end to really do what I presume Ducharme wants to do, which is have essentially five people attacking the puck at all times, not as many stay-at-home defensemen as we have.
It's also this weird, started thinking about this stuff where they have some of those guys coming up, right? But obviously they're not ready. You know, I'm thinking of like Norlander, and there's other guys that, you know, are, have that promising sort of really mobile offensive game. And it's just funny how they have this, like, you know, they have half of the lineup sort of ready, and then half of it's not. And then by the time those kids are ready to come up, they're going to have other... Anyway, it just seems like nothing's ever synced up properly under Marc Bergevin with, like, you know, getting the team exactly the right balance. And I know it's not easy, and I know, you know, every other team has these problems, but it always seems like he's built, like, you know, when he first came in, they did it, they're building one way, and then they switched it. And so by the time the switch happened, the first group of players were gone. And so they kind of went, you know, like they went from fast to big, and now they're trying to go back to fast. But as the fast is coming, the bigs, like I'm thinking specifically like Shea Weber, right? You know, he's going to probably not really see much of the future defense core of the Canadiens, right? I mean, he's seen Romanov now, but by the time a bunch of the other guys are ready, like Gouley, Norlander, and some of those other guys, he's most likely, if he's not going to be gone, he's not going to be Shea Weber. So it's just interesting how, like, the thing they're lacking is coming, but by the time it comes up, they're probably going to be missing another aspect of it. It's just...
Well, you've written about this. You've written about the cycles, right? And they always sort of are fighting the last war about based on what happened the last year, rather than trying to figure out what the future holds. And that's a feature of the Marc Bergevin era, and you can't necessarily blame him for approaching a problem that way, but it's the cycle of
the
tougher, slower, faster, weaker, and then repeat, doesn't give you a lot of confidence in terms of thinking about building a team that can succeed for the future, not for the past.
And the problem always feels like that he's trying to build the team like that from the ground up, which isn't necessarily a bad idea. You go through the draft, but if you're going to change your thought process halfway through, or you know what I mean? Like, okay, we want to get big and tough. We're going to start drafting bigger and tougher. And then we want to get faster. So, like, I don't know. It just seems like they never address it at the NHL level. So, like, they're either too small or they're too big and slow. Right? So, like, it feels, you know, I don't know.
All right, well, let's do some positive. Yeah. Let's get some positive energy going. So, look, the Habs lost their first game under Dom Ducharme, 6-3 against Winnipeg. It should have been closer, but, you know, the last period really sort of things fell apart. They had one day off on Friday. They came back on Saturday last night and lost 2-1 in a game the Canadiens played a lot better.
They probably should have won, but...
Probably should have won. Yeah. Now they have 2 days off. Today and tomorrow, before Tuesday night, they play our good friends, Ottawa. And I have to think the team is going to look better than they looked Saturday. And hopefully can get back on track. It's quite a few games this week. We see Winnipeg again on Thursday.
And Saturday.
And then Saturday, and that is at home.
Yeah, they're all three are at home.
So it's the worrying homestand where the Canadiens don't always seem to play as well as they do on the road. But you know what? I don't know if you... Did you see Dale Weiss? He was on the Twitter, and he made some comment about how with the new coach... The Canadiens aren't going to take as many bench miners for too many men. Did you see that?
Yes, I did see that. Yes, I did.
And then he sort of leveraged that to start some sort of new, I don't know if it's a podcast or a Twitch feed, but it's going to be like a commentary show of sorts on Montreal. And I just thought it was interesting. Say what you will about Julien, he did not always seem to be on top of what other teams were doing in game. He was more of like a master tactician where he had these systems and he sort of matched them to play whoever they were against. And then the in-game decisions didn't always make sense necessarily. And I wonder if that's part of why having the last change and being able to get your matchups a little bit better at home didn't seem to make as much of a difference, because the reality is you need to be more flexible, and being on the road forces you to do that. And I'm just curious about, I mean, that's like such a micro detail, but I am curious about whether Dom Ducharme's ability to sort of be more flexible in the moment will have any impact on how they do on at home.
Hopefully. I mean, they can't be any worse than they've been at home the last 2 years. So we'll see. I mean, the thing with Julien also is that was getting people a bit frustrated, and maybe we all don't understand completely how things work inside an NHL dressing room. I'm pretty sure I don't. But it's felt like the lack of adapting to situations within a game or within a season didn't exist. You know, and it can get frustrating watching your team try and do the same thing when it's not working and just thinking, hey, keep going, it'll be fine. And I think one of the straws that sort of broke the camel was, you know, we've talked about it when Ottawa sort of exposed the Canadiens and how to beat them. I'm not sure if there was also a part of that was regressing to a less aggressive style, but if, you know, it kind of, the two kind of seemed to meet when they played Ottawa for the first time and Montreal couldn't do anything offensively. And it just seemed that from then on through the month of February, it just spiraled where they couldn't get anything going. And it seemed teams knew how to handle the Canadiens and what they were trying to do. And there seemed to be no adjusting. So hopefully Dominic Ducharme, like you said, is more flexible and can be more fluid in how he wants to attack certain games and not just assume that his one strategy is the only one that'll work. You know, it's, I don't know, it just seemed like that. So I hope you're right. I hope we see a bit more flexibility is the word you used, and I think it's a good word about how you want to approach a game, and especially about who you're playing. But yeah, I mean, it'll be interesting to see, because the Canadiens definitely, even though there's no fans there, the Canadiens need to get way better playing at the Bell Centre for whatever reason. So
they got a reverse retro on those red screens in the seats. You know, it's too bright. It's the glare. I don't like the glare. Yeah. Hey, so Connor, let's unless you have anything else you wanna chat about, maybe we should do some predictions for next week.
Oh yeah, sure. So yeah, Tuesday they're playing Ottawa, and then Winnipeg.
Well, hold on. We'll get to the games. Let's go by position first. Does Price or Allen get more starts next week?
Ooh.
I love putting you on probably, a spot like this. I love.
Yeah, it. No, you're gonna probably, Allen's probably gonna play against Ottawa. I think Price is, it's gonna be, I think, 2-1 for Allen, because at this point you can't. I don't see how you can.
I agree.
Unless you go, you know, Tuesday Allen, Price Thursday, and Price, like, you know, steals the show. It is back to being Price.
Yeah, I
think most people are sort of seeing it's Allen's net until either Price shows that he's back and, as I said, sort of in control, which, like I said, he seems to be a bit out of control, or if he stands on his head, or if Allen completely, you know, poops the bed.
Right. No, I agree. 2-1 to Allen, that's what I have. Yeah. Are we going to see any significant changes on the D-line this week?
God, I hope so. I mean, it seems like everyone, and obviously, you know, it's easy to sit back as a fan and sort of yell to make these lineup changes, you know, like, because you know. But at the same time, you can't watch what's been going on and assume that it can't get worse. God, I hope it can't be worse. So something's got to change. I'd like to see Sherratt and Weber broken up. I'd like to see a bit more mobility spread out through the lineup, if that makes sense. You know, like, I know it's limited in terms of the back end, but I'd like to see a bit more speed across the three defense pairings versus we seem to, you know, especially on the top pairing. So I don't know how that's going to work, but whoever you put on the top pairing, I want to see a bit more speed. So yeah, Sherratt and Weber definitely need to be broken up. I don't know if he gives them one more game to see if they can figure it out, but I think by the second game, the first Winnipeg game, if it hasn't gone well against Ottawa, they definitely need to really, you know, shake it up.
So the last question is for the forwards, and go any way you want with this, but I'm just curious, do you think Deneau, Gallagher, and Tatar stay together?
I hope not. And I don't mean that in a bad way, because they've been a very productive line. But for whatever reason, it's not clicking, and it's weird that you can have this line that seems to have all this chemistry for multiple seasons and then all of a sudden not. But, you know, I guess you could point to say that Phil Deneau has sort of become a bit of a void offensively. And
he's a passenger. You know, he just feels like a passenger. this
show. No, and that's fair, but the fact he's not contributing at all, he's a bit of like a black hole, and he's sort of sucking in his wingers into his black hole of offense.
Yeah.
So I think, and it makes sense to me, and it's always made sense to me, to have him in a more traditional shutdown role. You know, you give him guys like Armia and Lehkonen, and those guys could, I think, ice most top lines in the NHL. I think they could be very, very effective as a unit. They're all very good at doing that. And I think, given the right circumstances, they could all find, you know, ways to contribute offensively, you know, because of it. And I just think maybe Dano, because like you mentioned before, all this stuff that's weighing on him, maybe just taking off the pressure of being the top guy, even though, you know, he says he wants it. Take it away from him. Let him just worry about, you know, don't necessarily worry about trying to score goals and all that stuff. Just worry about making sure this guy doesn't score a goal. Do that. And then, you know, maybe it'll just build up his confidence that way. But I would like to see, I'd like to see Suzuki sort of assume the top line, Kokoniemi assume the second line. You know, I'm putting, you know, I know they don't use the traditional, you know, 1, 2, 3, 4 of the lines there, but, you know, I'd like to see Suzuki and Kokoniemi be the top two sort of guys with ice time as centers. Just because, again, it's not working, whatever they're doing now, and so something's got to change, and I think it's about time. It's been all, you know, given these guys, what, 23, 22 games to get it going, and they haven't gotten it, you gotta change it up somehow.
Yeah, and when the Canadians were winning, those two guys looked good, especially Suzuki. So yeah, the future of this team winning comes down to those two guys playing. So if this is not going to be a good year for the Montreal Canadiens, let's get them as many looks as they can to build up not only their confidence but their experience going forward. And let's hope that they rise to the challenge and start either, you know, setting up Tatar, setting up Toffoli,
Gallagher,
whoever. Yeah. So yeah, I want to hear who's going to win what game. I just want to go on the record. I think I'm bullish on the Habs this week. I think they're coming out of this week with 5 points.
Ooh.
I think they're going to beat Ottawa. They're going to beat Winnipeg one of the two games, and I think going to force overtime in the third one. They haven't been particularly good recently in overtime, so I don't know if they're going to be able to solve it. But the skid stops now. You heard it here first.
Yeah, I don't think, especially if they continue the way they played last night in Winnipeg, they're definitely going to, if they play with that jump against the Senators, they should beat the Senators. For whatever reason, it seems like when they play the Senators this year, they've been lulled to sleep. So hopefully they can keep up the pace and the pressure. I think, yeah, I'm with you. I think 2 wins for sure. I don't know necessarily about the overtime, but still 2 wins. That's 2 desperately needed wins, I would say.
Yeah.
I mean, they can't afford to. I mean, they've lost 5 in a row, and I think, what, 7 of 8? So I think, you know, we kind of talked about it off the top. It's not the year to sort of go on a prolonged skid, because you really can't claw your way back in a season where you're only playing, the teams you're chasing are only playing each other. So it's hard to really make up points.
Right.
So, yeah, they need to win, too. I think, you know, I'm also going to go on a limb and say Carey Price is going to win his start. It doesn't necessarily mean he's going to be, yeah, I'm not predicting him being, you know, a 42-save shutout, but I think he will be a bit more dialed in than he seems to have been the last month. Well, all year, really, but I think it's going to be a better week for the Canadiens. It has to be. I think if they come away with less than 4 points this week, I think you might be safe to sort of, maybe it's a little too early to say right off the season, but, you know, it's getting close, because the top three, I mean, right now I think Montreal's sitting fourth, you know, by pure luck, I believe. I'm just going to put up the standard quick. Yeah, they're fourth right now, but
it's barely. But, I mean, they have games in hand, I think, but it's still,
The Flames are behind by one.
Yeah.
1 point, but they have, yeah, 2 games in hand, but, you know, Toronto's running away with the division already. They're at 34 points. So, you know, there's going to be this battle. I mean, even the Canucks at 18 aren't completely dead in the water yet, so.
No, and we'll Ottawa is showing a little bit of life. I mean, they shut out the Leafs. Yeah. They beat the Habs. I know they got beat badly by, what was it, Winnipeg the other night? But I don't know. It's yeah, it's a strange year, and I know that we use, in typical years, you use American Thanksgiving as some sort of cut point to try to figure out where this team is, and it's over the years has been fairly robust in terms of its ability to predict outcomes. It's hard to know how to think about that now, because that's essentially a month and a half into a 5-month season, right? And yeah, we basically have, you know, a 3-month season, and we're there now, if you think about, you know,
yeah,
that period. And that's got to be bad news if you're trying to think about the Habs squeaking in. Now, the good news is that it's 4 teams out of the North. The Habs should be able to find themselves in a playoff position, but they're going to have to start playing better. And it's at every position that we've seen problems.
Yeah, I guess if the Cavs find a way, I mean, I guess the positive we can spin out of this is hopefully they're going to start hitting their peak closer to the playoffs, so they can kind of, you know, the old Zion AB enter the playoffs playing well kind of thing. So hopefully that, you know, they're going through a bit of a dip. You'd rather go, I guess, through a bit of a dip earlier in this year than later in the year. So hopefully they can snap out of it. And hopefully this is the week they snap out of it. One last thing. I mean, I haven't seen anything, but Josh Anderson obviously didn't play last night. He got hurt in the first game against Winnipeg.
Weird slew foot behind the net.
Yeah. And I don't know, just said day-to-day, but, you know, he's been one of the better players, consistently one of the better players for the Canadiens. So hopefully he makes his way back soon.
Yeah, let's hope.
I'm looking here.
I'm not starting him next week in my fantasy, though. I don't think he's coming back as soon. They say March 1st, but I have my doubts. So that didn't look like a good injury. I know he's a big guy, but they need him healthy to be able to play his game and succeed. So
yeah, we saw last year in Columbus, if he's not healthy, what can happen? So make sure he's healthy. So anyway, with that, I think we've said all there is to say about this. So I'm Connor LaPalme signing off for the Last Round Habs podcast. Hopefully the Canadiens can give us a more promising March. Now that February's over, we're turning a new page, so let's hope it's a positive March. So yeah, enjoy the games, everybody.
Keep your stick on the ice. Jonathan Drouin might try to hit it with it.
This has been the Last Word on Habs podcast, brought to you by the Last Word on Sports Network. Join us next week. Until then, see you on the ice.